Like us to get started, please, because we've got kind of a long agenda, and I want everybody to be able to say their piece. This meeting is our third meeting of our Charter Interim Work Group, House Senate, and it's been interesting. I've learned a lot, and I think this is going to be a very interesting meeting because we're going to look at actual legislative proposals from different stakeholder groups. So I'm looking forward to it, and I'd like us to go ahead and get started. Do you have anything you want to say, Chair?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think that we've spent a couple meetings just with some background, and so I hope that this meeting is a chance for us to hear a number of different proposals. The focus today is on, you know, proposals that are coming forth from different stakeholder groups. It kind of gives us a menu of options. So please, members, take notes. We hope to be able to have a discussion today as well of other issues that you think may need to be addressed, things that you particularly liked, proposals that might need to be massaged a bit. As I've talked to some of the stakeholder groups, they have said that these are not totally refined yet, so I hope that they will take our feedback as well. So I just want to welcome everyone for being here today, and thank you so much. And Ken Ortner is my new assistant, and I welcome him to his first meeting as well. So welcome, Ken.
Thank you. Let's get started. Minnesota Association of Charter Schools, Eugene Piccolo, Executive Director.
Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee, my name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. First, on behalf of the members of our association, I want to thank the House and Senate Education Committees for establishing this working group to review the history of chartering in Minnesota, examining current issues and challenges, and exploring the opportunities to enhance Minnesota's charter school law. Even though our law is in need of some updating, clarification, and reform in certain areas, Minnesota's charter school law is still considered the best charter school law in the United States. This past spring, once again, Minnesota's law received an A rating in a survey of the 40 state charter school laws because of Minnesota's approach to chartering. Over the last 2 years, the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools has examined the charter school law section by section from the perspective of the challenges that have arisen over the years as folks have sought to implement the purposes and opportunities the charter school law has created for unleashing education from the confines of traditional conventions. As a result of our examination, the association has developed a comprehensive proposal to clarify and modernize the provisions of Minnesota's charter school law so that our charter school law stays as the model for charter school laws in the country. Last session, we worked with the Department of Education and your respective committees to pass some measures outlined in our comprehensive proposal. While we were successful in that effort in the legislative process, those provisions were lost when the K-12 policy bill was vetoed. So in the few minutes I have, I want to highlight some of our proposals. But before doing that, I just want to express our thanks and appreciation to the Office of Legislative Auditor for listening to the recommendations and proposals that we've presented and including a number of them in their reports to the legislature. Fundamentally, our proposal is about enhancing accountability to ensure that both the chartering process itself and the people involved in chartering are more effective in fulfilling the promise and purposes of chartering outlined by the legislature 17 years ago. So our proposals affect sponsors, school developers, charter school boards, school staff, and MDE, and address the approval, renewal, and termination processes, board governance, financial management, conflict of interest, pupil admissions, facility leasing, sponsor fees, standards for authorizing schools, the authority of the commissioner to hold schools and sponsors accountable for the and provisions that of what needs to be in the charter contract itself, and even definitions of basic terminology used in the law. You have before you a summary of major components of our proposal, and I just want to take a couple minutes to go through some of those. First, we propose some changes in the purposes and definitions of charter schools in terms of clarifying a couple of the purpose statements. Second, to create some definitions. There has never been a definition what an application is or what an affidavit is in the law, and so to put some of those. And one that sounds very minor but has enormous importance is to rename the concept of sponsors to authorizers. On the face of it, it sounds like it's just a word change, but it has enormous impact on the message and the framework that this would have. Sponsors are thought of as people that invest in something or put some money forward, or somebody who's a guide or somebody who's a friend. Authorizers talk about authority and accountability, and that's what we want to stress, is that what we are focusing on is accountability. And so we strongly support moving to the renaming the role, the name of sponsors to authorizers. We also want to redefine the definitions of those involved in conflicts of interest to meet federal standards, which was recognized in the auditor's report. We propose establishing a new charter school advisory council, but focused on very specific things. There was a council established several years ago that expired 2 years ago under law, sunsetted, and there were seven jobs given to that group. We did a study 2 years ago and found that only one of the six purposes was ever fulfilled by that council, and so we have redefined what the council would do. The bulk of what we're proposing has to do with authorizers and the relationship between authorizers and MDE. We want to clarify that organizations with church status cannot be authorizers or sponsors. Establish an approval process for authorizer organizations and define the categories of standards authorizers must meet to be approved. Establish a 5-year review process for sponsors. Clarify the role and responsibilities of the authorizer and MDE and charter review and approval process. Basically taking the recommendations of the legislative auditor to put the responsibility on the authorizer and move it away from the department. So the department focuses on approving and overseeing the authorizers, and the authorizers hold the schools truly accountable for what they're supposed to be doing. Redefine the components of the authorizer affidavit. Clarify the authorizer's review requirements for contract renewal. Allow authorizers to grant charters up to 5 years. Currently, our law allows up to 3 years, which is the shortest except for any other state except Mississippi. The average nationally is 5 to 7 years for charters. Revamp the authorizer fees to be based on a percentage of the basic formula aid and establish new minimum max amounts. We have been talking with sponsors for the last couple months about this, but really the last couple years, and we are, I think, about this close to coming to agreement on what that formula would be in terms of actual dollar amounts. Establish an annual authorizer report to the school and the commissioner about how much they've spent on authorizing, and clarify the terminology and process for charter renewal and termination, mutual termination, basically when a school and a sponsor agree that they are not the right fit for each other, and how that is done, and then to revamp the authority of the commissioner to have a clear power to withdraw the authority of a sponsor or authorizer when the authorizer is not doing their job. We also propose clarifying the contract and the role of the MDE and authorizers in terms of grade expansion and additional sites. Clarifying the granting renewal cannot be contingent on charter schools purchasing services from the authorizer. And redefine and clarify the components of the charter contract. A lot of what's in the law currently is just a statement of assurances, And what we want to see is some real things that have to be met during the course of a contract. In terms of governance of charter schools, we propose that all boards have non-related members on them. Boards must be at least five people, and we've had problems in the past where there's been related members on the board. We are proposing to put three options in terms of the board governance structure and eliminate the waiver process that currently exists for changing your governance structure from the teacher majority. Establish a requirement for board members to receive training within 12 months to be removed from the board. We would go farther than the legislative auditor who recommended that they must have financial training. We believe not only financial training, but they must have basic training on the roles and responsibilities of a board and the whole structure of charter schools. And so to have two requirements for that first 12 months. Clarify that school directors and financial directors cannot be voting members of the board. In terms of conflict of interest, bring it to federal standards. The legislative auditor pointed out that we have three different laws regarding conflict of interest for charter schools, and technically we should all be following federal law because every charter school gets some federal money. And so to clarify that in the legislation. Establish penalties for violation of conflict of interest standards and failure to submit annual audit on time. We believe that if there's a violation of conflict of interest, the contract should be automatically voided and give the commissioner the authority to withhold funding for the money that might have been lost under the contract. And also we believe that if schools do not submit their audit on time, there should be penalties for that. We know that would be even more stringent than is for traditional districts, but maybe we need to look at that for all school districts in the state of Minnesota. Define conflict of interest of authorizers. We also propose eliminating provisions for the geographical preference for admissions. There is a case regarding what a town versus a city that is now in court, and we propose, since this provision has never been used, that we get rid of it. Allow schools to give preference to children of their employees. Establish requirements that schools publish their lottery policy. They are required to have a lottery policy, but to strengthen it and make it clear they have to publish it and the process. And then clarify by putting stronger language that they may not establish criteria or requirements for enrollment. And then some further provisions to eliminate the language about requiring sponsor approval to raise funds. That is a provision that we don't believe has ever been utilized. It says that before school can start, and they want to raise money, they have to get approval of their sponsor, and nobody does that. And they are a nonprofit corporation, so under nonprofit law, they can raise money. Clarify the section on charter schools laws and restate which ones they are exempt from and which ones they are required to follow. Establish a date that teachers on leave from traditional districts must notify leave requests the following year. And clarify the process on leasing from non-sectarian and sectarian organizations. There are several other cleanup language things we have in our proposal, but these are the basic elements of our proposal. So, Madam Chair and co-chairs and members, I want to thank you again for scheduling these hearings, and in particular the session, which focuses on how the legislature and those of us who are involved in chartering might work together to enhance Minnesota's charter school law to ensure that the state that is the birthplace of chartering stays the leader and model for charter school legislation and accountability in the nation. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Piccolo, just in your section of recommendations about boards, you talk about three options for board governance. Can you describe what those three options would be?
One would be to maintain the teacher majority. The second would be to have a one-third, one-third, one-third model, one-third parents, one-third teachers, one-third community members. And the third option would be at least 20% of the board having a teacher, 20% of the board being a teacher. We find that especially in rural areas and some of our smaller schools, where they have to have five people on the board and teacher majority, that means three teachers on the board. and they may only have four or five teachers in the school, those teachers are saying, we never get any break. And so this would guarantee there's always teacher representation on the board, but allow people to choose one of the models and get rid of the waiver process then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. Just one of the recommendations that the auditor had was to eliminate the teacher board requirement altogether, and current law for traditional public schools forbids an employee to be on the board. And I guess I'm just wondering, you know, first of all, why you'd want to continue to have what seems to be a potential conflict of interest established on a board, and then I guess secondly, if you have three options, how are those options selected, and would a school have the chance to change options, and how would that be done? It would seem to me that there are potentially problems in the recommendation. I'm just curious as to why we wouldn't want to just take the auditor's recommendation of saying let's not have that at all. Can you comment on that at all?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Hunt. One of the purposes of charter schools is to create professional opportunities for teachers to be engaged in the direction of the school. And so to get rid of teachers completely from the board would undermine one of the six purposes of the charter school law. And we have schools who believe strongly in the teacher majority and who believe their success has been because of that teacher majority. And we have other schools who would argue that teacher majority has been problematic. And so what we are looking at is how do we address the full range of spectrum? Because one of the things about charter schools is that they're supposed to be unique and different and diverse. And so how do we recognize in law that diversity? By taking the recommendation of the legislative auditor to just change it from must to may lead to the fact that there may be no teachers on the board. And we just, because of the diversity of our members and so forth, we don't believe that's the best way to do it. In terms of the process, in our legislative language, the school would have to declare when they get their charter what form of governance structure they're going to have, and they would have to stay with that structure until their renewal of their charter contract. And so that would be something that the sponsor would be engaged in reviewing also as part of the process. The board would have to take formal action as part of the process of changing the structure. So there would be a formalized process so that people just don't change the structure of governance willy-nilly to address the personnel matter rather than the structural issue.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Piccolo, so, as I understand it, the recommendation of the OLA was not to do away with teachers from the board, but just the majority. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, the legislative auditor recommended the word be changed from must to may have a teacher majority. That could also lead to no teachers being on the board. And so one of the things, we want to make sure that all different ways of doing it are recognized in the law.
Senator Folsom.
Yes. Thank you so much for your work on this, Mr. Piccolo. It's very broad, and I really appreciate the work you've done. I have a question on point number two, establish a new charter school advisory council. That council did expire in 2007, and
right.
First thing I wanted to bring up is that under the old statute, the first matter for this group to deal with was to encourage school boards to make full use of charter school opportunities. And I noticed that in many of your points that I haven't seen anything about how traditional school districts and school boards can work with charter schools, because initially that was, you know, a sponsoring organization. We've had discussion, I know, in the Senate Education Committee last year on how do we encourage collaboration, be it through management, providing services. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because I didn't notice anything in your points.
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Saltzman. In terms of the relationship between district, traditional districts, and charter schools, we are not proposing any significant change there. I mean, they're one of the groups that can sponsor charter schools. The only thing we would say is that if, in terms of the conflict of interest, is if they are sponsoring a charter school, that our preference would be to not allow that to them to do the financial management of the school. But we have put in our proposal that any contract for management or for financial management of the school by their sponsor would have to be reviewed by the commissioner, so that any conflicts would be publicly known in that regard. But we are not proposing any significant changes in the other relationships between the districts and charter schools. What we have seen over the years is the number of districts who are sponsoring charter schools has not grown. In fact, it has shrunk. Most groups creating charter schools today find that districts are not normally amenable to being a sponsor, and so they've gone to higher ed or to the nonprofit sector.
To follow up, Madam Chair, is that could you explain why there would be a conflict between a school district also providing fiscal services, for example, because I think with some of the situations that we've seen where there has been fiscal mismanagement and we've seen the sponsors really do nothing or that they have no authority to intervene or deal with it, why would that be something that you would not support?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Saltzman, I think one of the things is if you are supposed to be doing oversight, how can you also be doing the books? Then who's doing the oversight? And we believe that authorizers should have more options in terms of holding the schools accountable. And in the details of our proposal, we believe it's much stronger, you know, responsibility by the authorizer. And as I said, in terms of financial reports and so forth, to give the commissioner authority to withhold funding if schools are not doing things on time and submitting reports.
Well, to that point, I guess I would challenge you is to say that, you know, school districts do their own books now and that their oversight is an elected school board that is elected by a community. So I would just perhaps challenge you in that. The other point I had was on the Charter School Advisory Council that you had, you know, you have some membership here, and one of them is school administrators.
Yes.
And if you could define that, because currently in Charter School Law 124D.10 under Subdivision 11, it says a person without holding a valid administrator's license may perform administrative supervisory or instructional leadership duties. And I guess I'd like to know, what do you define as school administrator? Because I think in statute we consider that a licensed professional. And are you suggesting that a school administrator who is licensed be on this group, or a school administrator as currently defined by charter schools, who could be anybody, should be on this committee?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Saltzman, we would define it by those who are in the executive director position, whatever the title is of the charter school. So it would be broader than licensed people.
So, Madam Chair, I think you need to clarify that then, because in my mind, a school administrator is someone who is licensed. And do you believe that at this point there is any need to look at the Subdivision 11? Because currently, we do require teachers to be licensed, but people who are providing administration, again, where we've had some problems, don't have any experience at all. And that, you know, no credentials, and yet are performing duties in some charter schools that are as large or larger than some of our school districts. So I just raised that issue as that maybe an area you might want to work on a little bit, in my mind, of defining a school administrator.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Representative Horn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Piccolo. Under your Section 3, the first bullet point, clarify that organizations with church status cannot be authorized. Do you see any other accountability measures that are needed to, you know, ensure the separation of church and state when it comes to this issue?
Madam Co-Chairs and Representative Hornstein, this particular proposal is to dress authorizers or sponsors in particular. There have been groups that I know have proposed schools to be sponsors at our churches, and we believe that that intersection should not be there. Our proposal is to actually use federal, the IRS code. There's a provision about nonprofits that have a church status as well as their 501c3 to define it that way, because we looked at Minnesota law and church and church-related organizations. There's several definitions under Minnesota law regarding that. In terms of just separation of church and state, charter schools are required to meet the requirements of any public school in terms of, on one side, accommodating religious practices of students, and at the same time, maintaining that separation in terms of things. One of the things we have looked at as an organization, and we don't believe it requires legislation as much as educating people. I think one of the things we've talked to people both in the Civil Liberties Union and other groups who have indicated, you know, this is not just a problem in charter schools, but it's often in traditional schools. And so one of the things we're looking at is, as an organization, to address educating people about where's the lines and what do you have to accommodate and what things you are not supposed to be dealing with.
Thank you.
Senator Olson. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Bickle, why did you choose to use the word church rather than religious organizations, which I think it might cover a broader spectrum that we've even had some challenges recently with?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Olson, as I said, in our actual legislative language, we're using the IRS definition of a church,
okay,
which is a 509... look it up.
Can you tell us what that is?
Since, yes.
No, or did I miss you saying it?
It is a, except those every church receive church status under section 509A1, section 170B1AI of the Internal Revenue Code. Basically, it defines that if you are a nonprofit that has been designated as a church, whether that church is a synagogue, a mosque, a church,
okay,
you would not qualify to be a sponsor. And we really struggled with, and we found this language in the IRS code, which reinforces what's already in our language about you have to be a nonprofit 501c3 to be a a sponsor. So taking it to the next step, we thought that is the clearest language in terms of definition, because there are several definitions in Minnesota statute about religious affiliated organizations, churches, and so forth.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You can imagine, Mr. Picklow, that some of us around the table do object to using that particular word, if that's the connotation, because those of us who belong to synagogues don't think of it as synonymous. So, so I would suggest that rather than accept the IRS's way of referring to religious institutions, that we put in a word that perhaps is a broader reflection of the various religious organizations in our community. But having said that, I have more questions about that, because I think that we have seen in the charter school movement that part of what is happening is that culturally specific groups have chosen to start up charter schools because they like this sense of community and what they're finding within this defined school. So I'm curious about, you know, it seems to me from what I've read or seen that there actually are schools that are in essence doing that. What is the law with regard to charter schools? And I think we're in a gray area here.
So that's, I guess, a question for us to talk about, yeah. Senator Bonoff. I think that we're not going to settle that today. I think that's on the to-do list. But yeah. I think that, well, it is a Thank discussion you. That I think has been started. And I encourage us to maybe keep asking questions, because all of us, and I do want to just mention that while this is the IRS code, you know, is that something that we want to define as a legislature? Because I think there are groups that are affiliated with particular faiths, and how is that something that we are all comfortable with, or that the public is comfortable with? I don't know the answer to that, but I appreciate your question.
Madam Chair, just following
Senator Bonner.
Does someone actually have what it currently says in law with regard to charter schools and the mix of religion?
I do have that.
Perhaps if Ms. Larson or Ms. McQuay are available, I do have something in front of me, but I would be more comfortable if they would address that.
Madam Chair, members, in the Charter School Law 124D10...
Can you pull a mic to you?
In the Charter School Law, Minnesota Statutes, Section 124D10, Subdivision 8, we have a list of state and local requirements. Paragraph C says specifically, a charter school must be non-sectarian in its programs, admissions policies, employment practices, and all other operations. A sponsor may not authorize a charter school or program that is affiliated with a non-public sectarian school or a religious institution.
Fairly clear.
Madam Chair, I think it's anything but clear.
I thought that sounded fairly clear.
But Madam Chair, it seems to me that based on that interpretation, you could in fact be a religious organization as long as you weren't sponsoring a school to do that. That was my interpretation of that. It did not say you could not be a religious institution. It merely said you could not create a religious-oriented school. And so I think for Mr. Piccolo to be making that recommendation is a change in policy and one which we should appreciate as that.
Representative Abler?
I have a more bland question. I'm sorry.
Because we do need to move on.
I'll move on. Anyway, so on this teachers on the board piece, is there going to be controversy about that? Are there a bunch of teachers in club so you can't take our majority away, or is this something that we can actually hope to accomplish change on that part? Just a short answer.
Madam Co-Chairs and Representative Abler, I don't think it would be a controversial thing within the charter school community if we have the options there. Other groups that are not part of the charter school community might have issues with it.
And they'll probably find us, Madam Chair. The second thing I just want to point out as we look at all these ideas about changing, having founded a charter school in 1994 with the help of Senator Olson back in a different lifetime, which is still doing very well.
Madam Chair, I'm amazed that you believe in reincarnation.
Yeah, well, around here, I think that's true. People. Well, yeah, you've brought it back. But I just hope that as we look at these proposed changes, that we don't take. Part of the reason that charters are evolved in the first place is to give flexibility and test out ideas without ruining the whole system if it was a bad idea. And then hopefully exporting the good ideas that came out of it. And frankly, I've not seen much of the good ideas coming out of that, with the exception of last week's meeting, which was, I think, great with those three individuals, those gentlemen that came. But I think if we can make sure that we extract all the good ideas, especially in lean times, from the charters, I think we'll see better outcomes in the kids. And that's my end game, which I'm sure we all share. So, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Piccolo?
Thank you.
Education Evolving with Bob Weddle.
Weddle.
Excuse me.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairs and members of the committee. My name is Bob Weddle. I'm a senior associate with Education Evolving, and it's good to be with you again today. Once again, the Office of the Legislative Auditor has done its usual thorough work and has laid out a set of recommendations that that we can all grapple with and come up with ways to address. This afternoon, I'm going to review three major recommendations, and under those three, have a number of sub points. But first, just a few comments with respect to the auditor's conclusions regarding student performance, and that is that basically the legislative auditor concluded that there really isn't that much difference between the performance of kids attending chartered schools and kids attending district schools that have similar demographics. But as I did a couple of weeks ago before Senator Wieger's committee, I think it's really crucial that policymakers use real caution in viewing this kind of data analysis. It's one point in time data, and the leading researchers around the country would urge policymakers or anybody else not to put too much credibility in single point in time data. That we really need to have multiple indicators over at least two cohorts of kids over 3 or 4 year period of time, using a value-added growth model of data analysis before you can really make judgments about the performance of a school. And we also need to keep in mind that school performance and student performance, while having a lot of overlap, are not the same things. So I'm delighted that I think Senator Wieger indicated that he's putting together a group that's going to be studying this in a bit more detail to make recommendations to the upcoming legislative session. But I just wanted to start my comments with that basic introduction regarding caution in terms of looking at student performance in terms of one point in time data. A few comments regarding the report to preface the report again that you know, chartering is creating chartered schools is one part of Minnesota's comprehensive public education system, and that it does need to be improved, and we've got recommendations, and certainly Mr. Piccolo made any number of the same ones that we will make, the economic time certainly will draw heavily on your time and your expertise. But one thing that we cannot do is hunker down and because of the economic crisis. We've got to use this opportunity to innovate, to look at creating new and different kinds of schools, perhaps more than if we were in good times. We need to do that regardless, but I would urge you not to curtail and not do anything different because of the economic crisis. In this flat world, Tom Freeman would say, now is the time to innovate. Now is the time to do things different, and we need to do that. Education Evolving has been working, Madam Chair, with the MAX organization, representative by Gene Piccolo, with the Center for School Change, with Dr. Joe Nathan, with the Department of Education. We have been working together, and so a number of our recommendations are going to be very similar to theirs, and I'm not going to be spending a lot of time on those similarities. The legislative auditor did identify that there is overlap and sometimes confusion between the role of the Department of Education and that of sponsoring organizations. And that certainly is true. We would recommend that we move to a model where the state approves and oversees sponsors, and sponsors approve and oversee schools. That would help to clarify this who's on first kind of situation, which we seem to have. You know, right now, for example, the sponsor approves a school for starting, and then the school has to reapply all over again to the Department of Education for approval again. And things of that nature, I think, could be clarified by having the state approve and oversee sponsors, and have sponsors approve and oversee the schools. But then that we have to put into place a system to make sure that we have high quality sponsoring, and there we would recommend that the part of the state overseeing sponsors is that the state actually approve sponsors as sponsoring organizations. Right now, if a sponsor is a nonprofit organization that happens to have $2 million fund balance, or a college or university or whatever, they are automatically an approved sponsor. We're suggesting that there be a rigorous process for approval of sponsors before they can, in fact, sponsor schools. And we would recommend that that be put on a pretty fast track, that no later than July 1st, 2011, all current sponsors would have to be approved, and also that no new sponsor could sponsor any schools at all without having first being approved. So this is not something to stretch out over a period of time, and we certainly believe that timeline is workable. We do include, Madam Chair and members, in the paper that should be in your packet. We do lay out 7 items that should be a part of that approval process. And I'm not going to review each one of those, but it's important that we believe it's important that the law stipulate what are those components, what are those criteria that sponsors need to meet in order for them to be approved as sponsors of chartered schools. And we're confident that with that approval process, we're going to be able to have much higher quality sponsoring, and we won't be seeing some of the difficulties that we have been seeing over the last couple of years. Also part of this recommendation that there be accepted standards for quality sponsoring. And a couple of years ago, I was the director of the Minnesota Sponsors Assistance Network, and we actually developed those standards, and I gave the chairs a copy of the manual that was developed. Minnesota was the first state to develop those rigorous standards for sponsors, and so we would urge that you don't need to go through a whole new system of developing standards. We think they are already developed, and also the National Association for Charter School Authorizers has developed these types of standards as well. Also, we believe that you need to have sponsor reapproval every 5 to 7 years. So it's not a one-time approval and then you're fine. It needs to be an ongoing oversight from the department, and then a reapproval periodically based on the performance of the sponsor. We also believe that an entity should be created, a separate entity should be created to make recommendations to the commissioner regarding sponsor approval. So it would not be something that would be done by the department. The commissioner would do the actual approval. But we believe that there should be a separate organization that would conduct these reviews, make recommendations to the commissioner, not only on sponsors, but also on the creation of new and different kinds of schools in the district sector. No, I don't want to get into too much detail on that, but to say that an organization that works in cooperation with the state, with the commissioner, would be set up to do this. So those are the recommendations with respect to clarifying the roles of the department and sponsors and laying out a process for sponsor approval and oversight. Our second major recommendation, Madam Chair and members, is to amend the current law to permit a new model of what we call single-purpose sponsor. And let me explain why. Right now, all of our sponsors of chartered schools really have something else that's their primary mission. A university or a nonprofit organization really has something else as their main job and has agreed to take on this job of sponsoring as kind of an avocation, if you will. As we go through the sponsor approval process, it's very likely that a number of our 50-some sponsoring organizations will say, we really are not going to do that. Maybe the sponsor would say, we're not sure we really have the capability to continue to sponsor, so we're not going to go through the sponsor approval process. Others who do go through the sponsor approval process won't meet criteria, so they won't be approved. So the question is, what then happens to the schools that they sponsor? They may well be good schools. So we would suggest that to create a new kind of sponsor who has as their only responsibility a job of sponsoring schools should be created. And those would be nonprofit organizations that would be approved by the commission through the same rigorous review process as any other sponsor, but then they would pick up the job of sponsoring these schools that would no longer have a sponsor. And also, because we're recommending that the Department of Education oversee sponsors, the department now sponsors, I don't know, 10 schools, something like that, under a previous law. If they're supposed to be overseeing sponsors, they'll have a real conflict of interest in overseeing themselves. So we would recommend that the schools that the department sponsors also be moved to one of these single-purpose sponsors. So that's our second recommendation.
Could I ask a question now?
Sure.
Because that one strikes a red flag with me, because I've seen charter schools where there's been very creative structure to build a building, you know, whether it's a PTO or PTA group, or, you know, all of a sudden they're building a $5 million building. I have a concern with that, and also a concern with what you're saying with that single-purpose sponsor. I see the kind of a similar tracking of that being formed, maybe by a parent group or something like that, and I just have concerns with, the amount of money involved, and... I guess I haven't been real pleased when I see some of these schools that have been built with, you know, a group forms and they build a building, and I see this very similar, and I guess I do have concerns about that.
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, I don't see the similarities in that as you are. This is the sponsor could not own the building this is simply to authorize the creation of the school, just like the North Branch School District could now. So obviously as part of the department oversight, that would guard against the types of conflicts of interest, I think, that you are referring to. All we're suggesting is that under our proposal, there's going to be a number of sponsors that will no longer be sponsors, and I think that's good. If they can't do the job, you shouldn't be doing it, and so therefore we can't say to a different sponsor, you're going to have to take these 10 schools. So we would prefer to say, let's create let the commissioner approve a separate organization that only has the job of sponsoring, not all the other things that our current sponsors do, so that they can provide the quality oversight of the schools that we think is necessary.
Okay. Senator Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point, I'm a little unclear. Why have no organizations such as you're describing, why have none emerged thus far? Why do we not have organizations that do nothing but sponsor charter schools?
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, there would be no real reason for an organization to start unless it had this paying to do so. Right now, the current law says that a nonprofit organization needs to have an end of year fund balance of $2 million. So that obviously is one restrictor. So this new organization would still be approved by the commissioner, but would not have that kind of financial requirement.
Well, and Madam Chair, what I don't understand is why any organization would start up to just sponsor schools. It would seem to me that would be highly unlikely to occur. So I appreciate the desire to try to say, well, let's have an organization that doesn't do anything but charter schools, but none has emerged, although it could happen today, just none have, and I don't know how it would emerge unless we created something, some quasi-governmental structure, and I'm not sure that
really facilitates the purpose of you have potentially the same conflict that you have having the Department of Education sponsor mm-hmm. schools. Mm-hmm. I'm not clear about how this model would work, and if not an organization like that has emerged so far, I don't know why one would emerge in the future once the law was changed. I'm not clear on why that would happen.
Madam Chair, again, Senator Hahn, I think the $2 million requirement is one reason. The need hasn't been exemplified before. That may well be another. But I have had discussions with any number of very respected people in the community that said, sure, I'd be on that kind of a board. It would not have a state appropriation. It would have to raise its revenue either from charter fees, sponsoring fees, or foundation revenue. That would have to be part of the commissioner approval process and of course the commissioner oversight process at all. So I think there would be a number of organizations that would develop for this function.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Okay, that's the second recommendation. Our third recommendation is to increase revenue for sponsors. I know the term increase revenue for sponsors, you think maybe this year nobody should get an increase, but sponsors haven't had an increase in 10 years. And even their current funding is so paltry that it's amazing that anybody would do it for $10 a pupil. So the organization that I worked with a few years ago worked with a number of sponsors to actually do a cost analysis study, and we could certainly provide you with that. But basically, it did a cost analysis of the actual real job of sponsoring, and it depended on what was happening in the school. If the school was just starting up, that cost more to oversee that. Or if it was in its renewal year when you had to do a comprehensive evaluation, that cost more. But if it was in its fifth or sixth year, everything was going along pretty well, well, then the cost was significantly less. So we would recommend that we'll let the sponsors and the schools argue that one out. But we do have a number of recommendations in our paper that you have in front of you with respect to increasing revenue for sponsors so that they can do the kind of quality job that you expect them to do and actually that the schools have a right to.
Thank you. Just a big comment. Thank you, Mr. Rado, because I think that some of your ideas, we may not agree with all of them, but it is pushing us to look outside the box at some of these issues, and I think that's a very intriguing idea. Whether or not anyone would do that, I think that it also does address the issue of the fact that there are a number of sponsors right now who are not doing their job. And so with the number of charter schools that we have, what's going to happen to these schools if they're sponsors, if, the whole relationship has to be, changed. Let me ask you a real brief question, because I know our time is short, but some of the concerns that we've had right now coming back to us are that sponsors aren't doing their job, but then what kind of authority does a sponsor really have to deal with issues when a school is not complying? And essentially, what they can do is certainly negotiate, but ultimately the only thing they can do is to say they're not going to sponsor the school anymore and give them basically a 60-day notice. Is there anything else that, charters should be able to do or have authority to do?
Well, Madam Chair, that's a very good question, and it goes right back to what's in the contract. Sometimes if a contract is short and sweet, maybe that has a real strong selling point, but then you're really without any tools to intervene. And so the contract certainly can specify. For example, when I worked in Minneapolis, one of my responsibilities was to oversee the charter schools, we included in their contract that if any bills were more than 30 days past due, they needed to let us know and what their plan was for paying those bills. So there's nothing in law that says that, but sponsors can include those kinds of accountability provisions in the contract so that they do have quicker access to information, and so that they can intervene.
So that's something that perhaps we should consider outlining, since some sponsors would be responsible to do that, but it's those who don't. Is that an opportunity for the legislature, or should the legislature be outlining what should be in a contract like that?
No, Madam Chair, the law does stipulate, I believe, 9 or 10 things which should be in the contract, and maybe that needs to be looked at so that it is more precise. But in that regard, I think we need to remember that when the charter law was initially enacted, and some of us were younger then than we are now, but not much attention was paid to sponsoring. The whole concept was totally new at that time. So it shouldn't be too much of a surprise to, after a period of time to figure out that, oh, maybe we needed to have paid more attention to a particular part of the law, and so now let's get in there and fix that. Madam Chair, if I could, I forgot to make one point, and that's when you were discussing Senator Han, or I'm not sure who, about the teacher majority issue on boards. There's actually another very innovative way to deal with that whole issue, and that is that a number of the chartered schools have set up teacher professional practices organizations, and what that is a group that's organized under Minnesota's cooperative law. And so that they, under the cooperative law, they own the co-op. So the teachers own their co-op. And then the charter school contracts with that co-op to run the school. Well, that's not, they're not the board, but they really are running the school under that contract. So that's one more way to really empower teachers to really be able to make the key both programmatic and financial decisions with respect to the operation of the schools. And those are fantastic to watch those kinds of discussions on that teacher professional practices board. Those teachers say we'd never go back and do it the other way.
Thank you so much. Any questions? Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, we have charter school sponsors, Katie Peel and Yusuf M. Jenny.
Madam Co-Chairs and members, thank you for inviting us to speak with you today. My name is Katie Peel, and I am the Director of Charter School Sponsorship for Volunteers of America. We sponsor 15 charter schools. The mission of Volunteers of America is to build self-reliance and to help communities meet their own needs. The charter schools help for both of these purposes. We are looking to support high-quality schools, and we operate several alternative schools in addition to overseeing the 15 charter schools that we sponsor. And those alternative schools work with Minneapolis Public Schools in addition to working with adult basic education. Prior to coming to Volunteers of America, I worked with the Legislative Auditor's Office, where I actually worked on the charter schools evaluation with Judy Randall. I'm joined tonight with Yusuf M. Jenny of St. Paul Public Schools. Currently, St. Paul sponsors 6 charter schools. We have been involved in discussions with other sponsors about the proposal I will present to you today. We are representing a group of sponsors who collectively oversee almost 100 of the charter schools in Minnesota. Before I begin, I would like to say that we appreciate the work of the legislature has already done through the program evaluation by the legislative auditor and through the ongoing work of this joint working group. Prior to these efforts, sponsors were largely unknown in Minnesota beyond the charter school sector. You have in your packets a summary of the sponsors' proposed statutory revisions, and I will go through a couple of the key items on this today. The OLA evaluation pointed out that the role of the sponsor is unclear. To clarify this role, OLA recommends that the sponsor be held accountable, and that the sponsors hold charter schools accountable for their work and results. We stand before you today as sponsors to say, hold us accountable. Additionally, we as sponsors are respectfully requesting the resources necessary to effectively implement our duties as charter school sponsors and to adequately hold charter schools we work with accountable for results. It is rare that an entity comes to the legislature asking for the opportunity to demonstrate more public accountability, but that is partly why we're here today. The OLA report states that almost 90% of sponsors think they should meet a minimum set of standards before they are allowed to sponsor a charter school. Also, in a survey conducted by the Audubon Center of the North Woods, which you have also was just handed out, that was conducted after the OLA report was released, almost all sponsors agree or strongly agree with OLA's recommendation to increase accountability for sponsors. The level of responsibility of the sponsor is far too important to be viewed as an afterthought in policy development, funding decisions, and resource allocation. As the OLA report suggests, and as outlined in the National Association of Charter School Authorizers report on the principles and standards for quality charter school authorizing, to be a high-quality sponsor or authorizer, organizations should conduct rigorous reviews of charter school applications, annually attend at least one board meeting, review monthly board minutes and financials, conduct several site visits each year, monitor the school's academic performance, and review the school's annual report. At the end of each contract period, the sponsor should also conduct a thorough evaluation of the school's performance as part of the contract renewal process. Sponsors must also intervene in a more formal and intensive way when a school is in crisis, not meeting the needs of its students, or not fulfilling the terms of its contract. This alone can take an inordinate amount of a sponsor's time and resources. However, currently sponsors are grossly underfunded. In 2007, sponsors were eligible to receive a total of $380,000 to monitor and evaluate the fiscal and student performance of 143 charter schools serving almost 24,000 students. In comparison, Pillsbury United Communities spent $120,000, or about a third of the total state aid, for sponsoring to just over 11 charter schools. St. Paul Public Schools spends well over the amount of Volunteers of America and Pillsbury to fulfill its role as sponsor and received just $17,000 last year in sponsorship fees. Nationally, our state provides some of the lowest compensation for charter school sponsoring. Not only is it proactive and responsible for us to adequately fund charter school sponsors, it is part of the agreement charter schools made in having greater autonomy in exchange for increased accountability. We are here to discuss the reality of charter school accountability in Minnesota. Unfortunately, due to the lack of resources available and clarity of their role, many sponsors are unable to adequately oversee the charter schools they sponsor. A national report rated charter school sponsors or authorizers throughout the country, and Minnesota received a C-. This has a tremendous impact on the overall quality of the charter school movement in Minnesota, as mediocre and underperforming schools are allowed to continue operating instead of being held accountable and required to improve or face being shut down as a final consequence. While the overall quality of charter school sponsoring practices in the state is uneven, there are several notable bright spots. In your packet, there is also a report on the Department of Education. And in that report, Volunteers of America was one of eight charter school sponsors in the nation to be featured as a high-quality sponsor. In Minnesota, a small but growing number of nonprofits, school districts, and colleges have thoughtful and rigorous sponsorship practices. What all these organizations have in common is that they must significantly subsidize their sponsorship duties. To oversee 15 charter schools, Volunteers of America received just $27,000 in sponsorship fees and spent over $120,000 last year. In the same report that VOA was recognized, the Department of Education noted Minnesota's poor sponsorship fee structure as a barrier to quality sponsorship in Minnesota. In our proposal, we agree with the OLA's recommendations to create a structure where MDE authorizes and holds sponsors accountable, while sponsors authorize and hold charter schools accountable. In order to accomplish this, we agree, as does Mass and Education Evolving, that the sponsorship fees must increase. We sponsors believe it should increase to 1.5% of the basic formula allowance. So in a school, for example, of 100 students, sponsors would receive about $7,500 to oversee one charter school. Again, let me revisit what a high-quality sponsor does. We conduct rigorous reviews of charter school applications. We annually attend board meetings. We review monthly board minutes and financials, conduct several site visits each year, monitor the school's academic performance, and review the school's annual report. In addition, at the end of each contract period, we conduct a thorough evaluation of the school's performance. Sponsors must also intervene in more formal and intensive ways when a school is in crisis, not meeting the needs of its students, or not fulfilling the terms of its contract. In order to effectively meet the expectations of the legislature, the Department of Education, and the citizens of Minnesota, we believe that funding for sponsors must improve. Beyond sponsor accountability and funding, we do have recommendations for changes in charter school governance, mostly aligned with the OLA recommendations and aligned with MAC's proposal.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Peel?
Yes.
The average funding, do you have an average amount that charter schools receive, and could you enlighten me a little bit as to how the fee structure is set up now? I mean, how is it determined how much charter schools will get?
Absolutely. Thank you, co-chairs and members. The fee structure is set up currently wherein the sponsor receives in the first few years of operations $30 per student for sponsorship fees, and then thereafter $10 per student. And the funding, as to your question on funding for charter schools are funded in the same way as all other public schools, in that the education, they receive public money for education similar to public schools. They do not have a tax base, however, they do receive lease aid.
Thank you. Thank
you. So let me just ask, if I might, what... how do you use the dollars that you like you currently receive and also propose to receive? What is the background of staff and the qualifications of people? Because when I think about a school board,
mm-hmm.
A school board is providing the oversight, so we're creating sort of this other layer in sponsors. And since we aren't requiring any licensed administrators currently within charter schools, that, you know, in some ways what you're talking about the sponsors doing is sort of oversight with that, not implementing it or actually being on staff. But so what's the background of people right now who are sponsors in terms of education? Because I'm guessing at Volunteers of America, that is not your primary mission of your organization.
Senator Saltzman and members, Volunteers of America is actually a fairly large part of our mission, and our mission is broader in terms of educational mm-hmm. outreach. So it is part of that education component, which is part of our major part of our mission. Mm-hmm. In terms of qualifications for sponsors, my qualifications, if you're interested, I have a master's degree. I also have a teaching degree, and I have experience working in education policy and in the charter school policy sector. So that's my current background. Mr. M. Denning can speak to his, and I would say that what it takes to sponsor is actually quite a bit. You have to be able to look at the academic performance of the school, so you have to be able to analyze academic data. You also have to have knowledge of school finance, which is quite complex in order to adequately oversee the financial management of the school. And additionally, which is not currently laid out in law, but it is definitely something that sponsors are that high quality sponsors do is making sure that board governance is high quality in the charter schools that they sponsor. So those are some main components.
Madam Co-Chairs, members, Senator Saltzman, I mentioned earlier I'm Yusef M. Janney. I'm the director of the Office of Educational Equity, which is part of the Office of the Superintendent for St. Paul Public Schools. I am also the charter school liaison for the district. I'm not sure what happens to the funding that we receive from charter schools, because it goes to the business office and I never see it. We send representatives from our business and financial office, facilities, curriculum, parent involvement, teaching, and a whole team of individuals to review the charter schools which St. Paul Public Schools sponsors. We sponsored the first charter school in the country. We have sponsored as many as 16 at one time. We currently sponsor 6 charter schools in the city of St. Paul. And we've, at last estimate, spend about 5,000 hours a year in our responsibilities reviewing, monitoring, and oversight of the charter schools which we sponsor. And I have not attempted to attach a dollar amount to that figure, because I fear that I may be burned in effigy if it ever saw the light of day. I will say, however, that we hold the charter schools which we sponsor to the same standards that we hold our own schools. Mm-hmm. And we conduct a thorough school quality review comprised of senior representatives of multiple departments. As part of that process, we also offer technical, security, facility, curriculum, health, nutrition, immunization, legal, accounting, and other resources on an in-kind basis throughout the year.
So that's very, you know, I guess my guess is that the people who are doing that are also licensed educators. They are professionals.
Or senior representatives of the business office and other departments within the school district. Facilities, accounting, we look at the entire, we interview students, parents, teachers, administration, the full gamut. We go from the boardroom to the boardroom.
Thank you very much.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. I'm not a math major, but 1.5%, I kind of figured it would be about $100 per kid. You know, that's not a whole lot for all the things that you just laid out. A 500-student school, you know, you'd be... I appreciate that's better than $10, but for what you're saying you do, that doesn't really seem like it would, you know, be even a break even. If that's your goal, is to try to be at more of a break even point.
Senator and members, this is definitely not a number of attempting to break even. We understand the strain under which charter schools are, and want to make sure that we are providing the best service possible to those schools without putting undue pressure on the schools themselves as well. This number, in all honesty, will not fully cover our sponsorship duties. It will come a little bit closer, but it won't actually make it break even. Sponsoring charter schools is part of our mission and part of the belief in the work that we do. But we know that the current funding structure, and understand that the current funding structure under which we are working, is severely hindering sponsors from being high quality sponsors in the state.
Thank you. I'm having trouble wrapping my arms around that, because a 500 student school, I'd be like, what, $50,000? That's not even a full-time staff person to oversee. You know, that's a lot of work. That's a fairly large school. I guess I am having some trouble seeing what would be the right number for if we were to go to a model that talks about an entity that sole purpose is overseeing charter schools. They would truly have to have some other revenue sources. I guess I can see that.
I can't speak specifically to Education Evolving's recommendation on a single purpose sponsor and what they would suggest as to the revenue stream for that single purpose sponsor. But yes, there would need to be something more for the single purpose sponsor, but that is not how the current environment is for sponsors. You know, if I can say, it is definitely something in which we feel that it is very important to have an increase in the funding for sponsors, and we believe very strongly in that. And what we want to do is work with the charter school environment, the charter schools, and others involved, and make sure that we come to an agreement, at least to start getting to the point where we're improving the sponsorship in Minnesota.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda is Mr. Kite, the Executive Director, Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Dr. Kite.
I do have a quick handout.
Representative Slocum and Senator Saltzman, members of the Joint Committee, I think I would say that properly. I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Our association represents school superintendents, many of the central office administrators, and many of the special education directors across the state of Minnesota. I have a brief handout that I put in front of you, and I'm just going to try to hit the three areas fairly quickly, and maybe hit one or two of the main points in under each category. I know you can read and figure much of this out yourself and either agree or not agree with us. The three categories that I'd like to address, one of them has been addressed quite a bit tonight. It's the area of oversight. The second one, we fought a little bit to figure out exactly the name, but I'm just going to call it the integration of cultures, and hopefully I can explain that. And the third is the efficient utilization of school facilities. Three issues we'd like to address. The first one on oversight. We're seeing, and as you heard testimony tonight, there's very spotty oversight from the sponsors. And I have to say, a number of them, many of them are doing this quite well. But some are doing it really, really badly. We have a number of recommendations. The first one, and probably the most controversial, is that we would recommend that the sponsorship of charter schools be made only by public schools and by accredited colleges. What we're trying to direct our thinking here towards is, let's have the folks that are in the business of schooling children be the ones who are in the business of sponsoring charter schools. We also agree with some of the testimony we heard earlier that at least some of the money that goes per pupil unit to a charter school should go to the sponsoring organization to provide oversight and have some requirements for that oversight. That is not unlike when money goes to a public school district. Some small amount of it is reserved for the school board to provide the governance for those students. We also would recommend that the sponsor place a, for what lack of a better word, an ex officio member on the actual charter school board so that there's somebody there in person to keep an eye on what's going on. And finally, we would recommend that the charter schools be limited geographically to the service area of the sponsor. Now, we recognize that one of the sponsors we are suggesting could be the University of Minnesota. One could be a regional college. Others might be individual school districts. But let's try to have the sponsorship and the oversight somewhat close so that we can attend to what is actually going on. Enough said about oversight. I think you had more and even better recommendations earlier tonight. Let me speak to the integration of cultures. Minnesota has always been a place that has attracted wave after wave of immigrants from all over the world. And one of the things that Minnesota has done as successfully as anywhere in the world has been to integrate peoples together so that they live as part of a common society and a society that knows each other. One of the prime places that this was done in Minnesota was within the public schools, where immigrant groups came together, and I have to say, struggled, clashed, trotted out, figured out how to live together, good people then bringing kids together and saying you need to learn how to make this work, and ultimately, hopefully, then producing people in our society that are tolerant of each other. One of the things that has happened, and I don't think this was an original intent or original evolution of our charter schools, but it has begun happening more and more, and it troubles us a lot, is that we are now creating charter schools that are much more specific for different categories of students. And what we're losing is the common wheel, the mixing of the students. Now, I know and you know that the law says any child can go to any school, but the reality is we are not doing that in many cases, and we need to address that. We have a couple of suggestions. We don't think we're even reaching quite far enough here. But there needs to be an appraisal of the effect on racial desegregation plans of the existing school districts and other charter schools in the geographical area prior to the approval of a new charter school. And we need to require sponsors and appropriate state agencies to closely monitor what's going on in our charter schools so they do not violate the boundaries of racial integration and the interactions between schools and religious organizations. I know this is, I'm saying this, I probably inflame a few people, and I understand some of the challenges many of our groups of people in our state have had in educating the children, but it still seems to us that we need to find some ways to make sure we're mixing and bringing children together one way or another. Third, I'll go on to the third piece I'd like to mention, that's the efficient utilization of school facilities. We should be cognizant in Minnesota of trying to take our very, very large investment in building the buildings where our children are educated and have an approximate match of the number of buildings with the number of students that we have in the state. Our enrollments in the state of Minnesota demographically are falling and are going to continue to fall. It begs the question, should we be building more schools when in fact we should be closing them? I don't know how many schools we truly, really don't need right now in the state of Minnesota, but I would guess that number is somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to 200 school buildings. We are paying to operate schools when instead we should be paying to educate the children. The process of closing school buildings is very, very difficult. It is made even more difficult by the fact that a lot of folks are hesitant to address this because if you close a school building and you spin a charter school in its wake, in the end you haven't made any gain in terms of efficiency. So we recommend, number one, that there be a 3-year moratorium on the creation of a charter school in any school district where there is either a proposed or actual closing of schools taking place. The reason for the moratorium is it allows the citizens, the parents, and the children to adjust to maybe 2 buildings instead of 3, rework their relationships, and after 3 years, if it still isn't working, let's go ahead and open charter schools. But let's give us some time to let those relationships work out. And the second piece is that we should have an appraisal of what the impact of a new charter school is going to have on an area if a school is going to be built and operated, and essentially the result is that you're taking a set of school facilities that are being used efficiently, and all of a sudden now you're using them at significantly less than capacity while you're building another school across the street or in the same neighborhood. So there needs to be some way that we look at this prior to simply opening another school and then letting other places stand half vacant. So those are suggestions that we would make. We recognize that this is a complex process with a lot of players, but we want to put these ideas on the table. Hope they will at least help the conversation move forward. I stand for any questions you might have.
I have a couple for you. My first question is, how many charter school administrators are members of your association?
I believe off the top of my head, 3.
And how big is the organization as a whole?
It's about 500 members. There's 350 school superintendents in the state.
I would say there needs to be some outreach.
Yeah, there does, but we also have the requirement that the members of our association are licensed administrators in the state of Minnesota, so that in order to be a member, they would need to be a licensed person. And we would be very, very happy to have those people as part of our organization.
Okay. So to that point, and also, I guess your question is that when you said 3, I was concerned that, are they qualified to be superintendents? That, you know, the superintendent organization is a, like, you know, professional organization. They are involved with our rulemaking, I believe. And so I think that speaks to the fact that we have a lot of charter schools that are being run by people who are not licensed as superintendents, and certainly I hope if they are that there is outreach, but that is an issue. And so, Representative Slocum, if you'd like to have more people in this group so that there is a networking and, like you know, camaraderie, we're probably going to have to change our statutes in terms of what we require of the charter school administrators, and I'd be happy to work with you on that.
I have a second question, too. That I didn't get a chance to ask. You know, I'm reading what you handed out to us about the integration of cultures, and for years I have totally supported that, and I do. However, when the school was the great melting pot, then we would send kids in buses back to their racially isolated homes and neighborhoods. It's a bigger problem than schools. We also have a gaping achievement gap that gets larger and larger, and a dropout rate that won't quit, or doesn't seem to be in the near future. And I looked at the schools that came and presented at our last meeting, and they're having success with pockets that traditional schools are failing. We need to replicate. What are they doing? I teach in a traditional school. We need to reach and replicate some of the systems, some of the charter systems that are working with populations we're not making it with in our melting pot.
Representative Slocum, I don't disagree with you at all. Addressing two parts of what you said, the first is that our racial isolation is driven partly by population movements. It's been driven by housing policy and many other things. Sometimes many things the schools are blamed for are issues that are a much bigger part of society. And, you know, you can only from your spot as a teacher or a school administrator fix so much. Second point is, I do think that we should be, first of all, I'd say this. There are many places in the public schools of Minnesota where we are addressing some of the same kind of issues that the folks that testified here address, and maybe not being presented here, but they're being addressed. But that said, we also should be wise enough to be looking at what is happening and figuring out ways to bring that to scale so that we can do a better job. So that in your school, you're finding ways as a faculty and as a school to address some of the very, very same issues that you're seeing addressed successfully in other areas. We are in agreement with you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Dr. Nathan, Hope Collaborative.
Madam Co-Chairs, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today, and thank you for the many fine things that you're doing to try to help improve public schools. There are always a number of ways to look at issues, and I'm going to suggest some other ways to look at issues and to try to address some of the suggestions that you earlier have made today. Both Senator Salzman and others have suggested that it is important to replicate and to learn from the finest schools in the state. And indeed in the country. Many of you had the opportunity to hear at the last hearing from Don Samuels, from Eric Mahmoud, and from Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson and Eric Mahmoud are eager to help replicate their schools. In fact, they've been contacted by some people who want to work with them. Perhaps the Superintendents Association would benefit by learning what it is that Harvest Prep is doing so that African-American students at Harvest Prep and the African-American students at the Higher Ground Academy have a higher academic achievement on Minnesota's statewide test in reading math, in some cases double the achievement, double the percentage. They have double the percentage of students who are proficient in reading math, as you heard in the last meeting, compared to not only urban districts, but to a number of suburban districts. So I would argue that we ought to be focusing on results. So let me make five specific suggestions about how we could focus on results and, frankly, save a bit of money for the state of Minnesota in the process. First, the state of Minnesota has allocated literally millions of dollars of public funds to help start charter public schools. I'd suggest an immediate change in that process. Rather than allocating state funds to help people start charter public schools, when there already are funds that the state of Minnesota has received on in a competitive process from the federal government, I'd urge that the state of Minnesota make an immediate change in this situation. Morgan Brown and I talked about this earlier today, and he informed me that more than $3 million in the last 2 years has been allocated for this purpose. And I'd suggest, as you can see in the testimony, that in the next year when you look at the school funding, that you change that provision so that instead of funding going from the state to help people only create charter public schools, that funding would be available to both district and charter public schools, and it would be used to replicate outstanding district and charter public schools here in Minnesota and around the United States. It is time, as both Representative Slocum and Senator Salzman have said, it is time, it is far past the time when we should be replicating outstanding schools. Indeed, we have a public-private partnership in Minnesota that is being cited all over the United States. The state of Minnesota and public funders and private funders step forward to help replicate the KIPP schools, which have been replicated all over the United States. It's a marvelous example of a public-private partnership. So, the first suggestion is that we convert the present state funding for charter public school startups to state funding for districts or charter groups to replicate successful charters in Minnesota and around the country.
Just a question, Madam Chair, just to clarify. So what you're suggesting, Mr. Nathan, is that instead of just saying anyone come, let's start new charter schools, that the money be focused to only replicate those schools that are currently successful. Am I hearing you right? Because we do have limited resources. But instead of saying, well, just let's keep innovating and some work and some don't, let's start to build on the success stories. Would that be accurate?
Madam Chair, Senator Salzman, we have two pots of money currently. We have the federal funds, mm-hmm. which already are available, coming from Washington, of course, coming from taxpayers from all over the United States. But Minnesota has received more than $70 million. $70 million, by the way, that neither North Dakota nor South Dakota have received because they don't have charter laws. So I'm suggesting that we retain that money and allow people to create new charter public schools, but that the state money that the legislature allocates, that's the state taxpayers' money, that money ought to be used for the replication of outstanding schools, and that money would be available not on an entitlement basis, but on a grant application basis, either from district public schools. I know that Mr. Mgani and I have worked together many times over the years, and that the St. Paul Public Schools, like many other district schools, have created schools within schools. I remember working with people in the Stillwater District when they created the Stonebridge School, an innovative school. So I'm saying that the state money ought to be available, not just to help set up charters. It ought to be available to both districts and charters to set up innovative new public schools based on the replication of some of the finest charters around the United States. So that state money would be available more broadly to help replicate and to do what I've heard both of you talk about earlier this evening, which is to replicate and build on the models of schools that have really worked.
Thank you.
The second major recommendation is that we retain or close charter public schools on the basis of results, not on the basis of racial composition of schools. Like many in this room, I marched. Like some in this room, I have some scars on my body related to marches and having bricks thrown at me, literally, involved in the South in the 60s. Having said that, earlier this week I was on a phone call with people in Topeka, Kansas, African-American parents who are trying to create a charter in the building that literally was the source of the Brown versus Board of Education School District. I think it's a very complex issue, far more complicated than is sometimes presented. As you heard at the hearing, and Don Samuels apologizes for not being here today, he had another event that he needed to be at, but Don pointed out, as did Eric Mockmood, as did Bill Wilson, that some of the most effective charters in Minnesota with African-American kids are schools that are 90% African-American. One can also point out, of course, that we have many school districts in the state that are 95 to 98% white. And I'm all for bringing together kids of different races and economic levels. Indeed, we'll be bringing people from the Minneapolis Public Schools tomorrow to see an outstanding charter 5 minutes from this room that's focused on the arts, where half of the youngsters in the school are from the suburbs, and half of the youngsters are from Minneapolis or St. Paul. I think it's marvelous that that program has been created, and I think it's very encouraging that Minneapolis has expressed some interest in learning more about it. So I think that we ought to retain or close charter public schools on the basis of results, not on the basis of their racial composition. You've already heard a good deal of discussion about sponsorship, and I'm not going to say much more about that, except two quick points. First, it seems to me, again, focusing on the results issue, that we ought to require charters that are in their first 3 years and are receiving federal startup funds to pay somewhat more, and that we ought to reward schools that have had their first contract renewed and are meeting the state requirements in terms of statutory operating debt so that they would have to pay somewhat less. MACS and the sponsors are currently entering into negotiations, actually been negotiating for some time about exactly how much should be paid. And I think that they should be, the sponsors should be paid more, but I think they should also be held accountable for results. As some of you know, I helped to write the first charter law, and I think that there were very strong recommendations about how the sponsors should operate in the first few years. Unfortunately, some of those were ignored by state officials, but there we have learned a lot, and certainly part of what we ought to do is to give sponsors somewhat more in the way of resources, but also hold them accountable for their for what happens with their schools. Two last suggestions. First, this is something that, that Dr. Kite and others have talked a good deal about, and something I think many in the charter and district public school community agree on, and that is that we ought to institute a value-added system of assessing public schools. One way of determining which are the outstanding schools is to look just at how they did this year or last year. Another way is to really see how much progress is being made, and there is enormous support in both districts and the charter public school community for moving ahead on this, and I know that several of you have worked on this point specifically. Finally, in terms of operating internal, in terms of the internal operating conditions of charters, I think it's important to recognize that a lot of work has been done by MACS with some partners, but with leadership from MACS, and I think that those are good ideas. One last point. It seems to me that, as many of you have said, it is critical to learn from the very best ideas, whether they're district or charter. And as Dr. Kite knows, we tried to learn from some of the ideas that he put together when he was a superintendent in the Northfield District. We have this document that we have provided to you in the past and glad to make available again that describes some of the finest charter and district schools around the country. We have this document that I've presented to you that describes a new charter and alternative school training program, which will not cost the taxpayers of Minnesota any money. We will not be asking for appropriations because we've been able to obtain support from the U.S. Department of Education in a partnership with the Minnesota Department of Education. And one of the documents that you have in your packet is an article from the Washington Post that appeared 10 days ago talking about this program and an article from Education Week. One last point. Seems to me that we really need to focus on results. And when the results are encouraging, we need to model and replicate and learn from and spread. And we need to focus on what's happening with the kids, and we need to recognize that they're outstanding districts as well as charter schools and learn from and replicate those. And what I'm suggesting is to take a step toward that. I know that Senator Salzman has been very interested in certain ways of dealing with kids who have been classified in previous years as kids with special needs. This is a classic example of replicating outstanding programs, and we need to do much, much more of that. Finally, it seems to me that the last thing that we need to do in this country is to ignore the advice that President-elect Obama gave to the nation yesterday. He said, "We cannot continue like this. It is morally unacceptable for our children and economically untenable for America. We need a new vision for a 21st century education system where we are not just supporting existing schools." I want to repeat that sentence again. "Where we are not just supporting existing schools, but spurring innovation." And he went on to commend the Secretary of Education designate for his strong support of charter public schools in Chicago. Seems to me that what we need to do is to learn from the finest schools in this and other states to replicate and expand and encourage innovation, but also, as you've heard tonight, encourage accountability. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you.
Dr. Nathan, just one little piece of information. I was at an accountability and assessment meeting at the MDE this week, and they are developing a growth model. I'm sure you probably know, embedded in the MCA2s, I believe, that will be hopefully included on the report card. I'm reserving judgment because I haven't seen it quite yet, but I'm hopeful. I carry some of the legislation on growth and value added.
And certainly Senator Rumble has done that as well. So like her, she was a leader in the Senate on that last year and continues to work on that also.
The department will, thank you, Kathy, the department will unveil the growth model tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
The assessment coordinators and people have come together. We think we have the first step to a independent measure. So it's already in place. All the scores will be available tomorrow.
Madam Chair, and members, a last point about the issue of accountability and results. I hear very clearly a frustration on your part with some charters that have not done a good job of managing resources. And any fair description of charters in this and other states has to acknowledge that that's true. I was reading largest daily newspaper in the state and learned that a suburban well-funded district has just discovered after 5 years, not a district, a well-funded suburban district has just discovered a computer glitch and has given $3 million of extra money to their school district. I recall another very well-funded suburban district a few years ago that found that it was more than $3 million in debt. I think we ought to focus on results, and those districts had certified administrators. If we focus on results, we're going to give people like Eric Mahmoud a chance to create schools. We're going to honor and replicate them, even though he has a good deal of business experience, but he does not have a certification in education. We've got to focus on his results. We ought to focus on the results of Bill Wilson, who also has an extensive public policy career, also has developed a school that has far higher percentage of students who are African-American, who are proficient on the statewide tests, but he does not have a certification. So once again, I think that we need to focus on results. And we need to encourage excellence, we need to replicate it, and we need to have real consequences for misbehavior, real consequences for failing to notice computer systems that have a glitch for several years, real consequences for people who take public money. There are real consequences and real rewards.
Senator Rummel. Thank
you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Nathan, thank you for your presentation. I am with you in this cry for focusing on results. What is your plan for charter schools who do not produce results? Do you have a system or a procedure? Do they just go on and on?
Madam Chair, Senator, from the very beginning of this movement, the Center for School Change has urged and pleaded that there be explicit, measurable results, that schools be held accountable for making progress toward those results. There was a front page story in the Star Tribune, which was adapted from a story in the New York Times that describes a report that we did 10 years ago in which we challenged the charter movement in this and other states because we said not enough attention was being paid to clear, explicit, measurable results. From the very beginning, a number of us have urged that there be clear, explicit, measurable results in a variety of ways, assessed in a variety of ways, using a growth model, and thank you for several of you for your work on this, using a growth model, which we were recommending in some cases 20 years ago. But those schools that are not making progress toward or have not achieved their results should be closed. And I was one of the very first people in this state to testify at the State Board of Education some years ago when we had a State Board of Education that a school that had significant academic problems should be closed. And there were some members of the State Board of Education that were quite surprised that someone involved with the charter movement said, let's close the school, it's not accomplishing its results. But our organization is on record in writing on this issue going back a number of years. So the answer, and I apologize for the length of the answer is absolutely public schools, district and charter, should be held accountable for making progress, and if they're not, they should be given perhaps one more year, and if they are not, then they should be closed.
Any further questions?
Well, my real question is what process would you recommend so that a just and suitable judgment is made about schools so that, as somebody said earlier, one point in time certainly isn't sufficient, but when do we have sufficient evidence, and then what kind of a process would we use?
Madam Chair, Senator, Mr. Piccolo of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools and I have cooperated for the last 3 years in reviewing charter public schools, and we volunteered to do this, and we have in every instance talked with people about the process of having clear, explicit, measurable goals and about the process of how those goals are going to be assessed. And in a number of cases, we have said to people who are proposing schools, this is not acceptable. So we have worked with Mr. Brown of the Department of Education, and before that, when Bob Ladle was the commissioner, we worked with him on the development of a process whereby sponsors have a contract with clear, explicit, measurable goals, where there is a method in the contract that describes what the expectations are, where there is an explicit explanation of what the assessments are going to be, and they should not just be standardized tests, they should be attendance, they should be behavior. I recall recommending, for example, to a rural Minnesota district some years ago that they close the school because there were a lot of assaults taking place and the children were simply not safe. That was a charter public school that was not well-managed, and ultimately a new superintendent came in and decided absolutely right and closed it, and a number of us saluted him. So for his efforts to do that and testified publicly in favor of doing that. So the process is first to have a contract with clear, explicit, measurable goals. Secondly, to have explicit agreement in the contract about how those are going to be measured. Third, to have an understanding about when assessment is going to take place. In Minnesota, it has been towards the end of the second year. I think a number of us are recommending a 5-year contract. But there is a National Association of Charter School Authorizers, and Justin Testerman, is Justin still here? Justin is a national board member. They have developed model contracts. They have developed examples of the kind of thing that I talked about. And some, as Dr. Kite notes, some of the sponsors in this state are using it. I will say that the quality varies, and it's not that all the districts are using the quality processes and the other organizations aren't. Some districts are doing a fantastic job, and some are not, and some nonprofit organizations are not doing a particularly good job, and some are. So again, I think that the sponsors ought to be judged on results. But the process, and I apologize for the lengthy answer, the materials are in place, the examples are in place, we know from excellent sponsors throughout the United States how this can be done, and it is being done by some sponsors here and by many sponsors in other parts of the United States.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Dr. Nathan.
I'm going to make 1 30-second, and now your time is at the end. So, 1 30-second point that I forgot to say here, and it's about this issue of the religious sponsorship, and that is a complex issue. Having said that, I strongly agree in the original language of the legislation that said that charters should be nonprofit, and that they should be non-sectarian. And I'd be glad to work with you and committee staff on the precise language, but I think it should be clear that no charter public school in Minnesota should be set up to further any particular religion. We should be vigorous about that, and we should be vigorous about making sure that no sponsor is in the business of using the charter movement to promote any particular religion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder, Madam Chair, if very quickly, since the intent of our agenda tonight was to look at proposed changes, I know that MSBA is here as well as Education Minnesota, the School Board Association, and they have positions, as everybody else, I think that people haven't brought forward specific legislation. These are works in progress, but I'd like to hear from them in terms of all this before we start public testimony.
That sounds fine with me, and then we'll do public testimony. Actually, this could be public testimony. Okay, could you please say your name into the microphone? And
My name is Kirk Nyland, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Board Association. Madam Chair, and I apologize for being late to the game here, but this is something that we felt like we need to say something about. And basically what has been created when they created the charter school laws, they created two public school systems. And I think just like when you talk about or reprimand your sons and daughters and one feels like they're being treated unfairly by another, you never hear the end of it. And I think that over the years we continually see this issue of pointing fingers, but we're beyond that, I believe. I think we're beyond it. I think there's definitely some fixes that need to be made here. And I think constructively, we've heard a great number of recommendations here today that need to be considered. One of the issues that came to us this year in our delegate assembly, and as you know, our issues are generated by school board members from across the state. And one of those issues deals with the issue of desegregation and racial issues. And one of those issues that they want to see considered is to require an application for a proposed charter school to be valid only for a specific address. Secondly, they want to require the sponsor of a proposed charter school to state in their application how the proposed charter school's enrollment would impact the intensity of segregation of an existing racially identifiable school in that community. And thirdly, it would require the Minnesota Department of Education Commissioner not to approve a proposed charter school application if the charter school's enrollment will intensify the segregation of an existing racially identifiable school and or will create a new racially identifiable school in that community. So while there's issues related to this and we've heard some ways to resolve that, it's something that our members are feeling in the field. And they're seeing the repercussions of this and how this could be changed. And so they're proposing some changes here. And whether we get to a legislative piece, we certainly will work with you on as you look at revamping or reconsidering some of the current law. So that piece is out there. I understand the complexity with this issue. But they also, when at school board level and district administration have to deal with this, it becomes a very complex issue as well. Secondly, we would certainly support greater oversight, and we've talked, and I don't need to jump on that bandwagon again, but it's something that we have seen over the years. We've seen continued legislation that requires more from charter schools, more oversight from the state, more oversight from the Department of Education, and we do think that the sponsorship should be strengthened. And I think you also, it was alluded to a little bit earlier, is an issue on the local level and dealing with the leave provision to leave for a charter school. And I think it's something that our school board members have shared with us that they want it to be consistent for those people returning from charter schools as well as those other folks who are returning. And that was a bill that was carried by Senator Saltzman last year. And I think from a management perspective, I think that gives school boards and administrators a much better feel on when these people are coming back and if they're going to be coming back to teach in their school. So for planning purposes, it's helpful. And then lastly, a little nugget for us is an issue of accounting so much, is the issue of counting charter school students in terms of open enrollees out or in. And this might be a UFARS issue that can be addressed through the department, but it's something that when an individual open enrolls or enrolls into a charter school within a district, it's something that they are considered an open enrollee out of that district. And I understand that charter schools don't have district boundaries, so to speak, but it's a semantic issue, I think, for public schools. When they're reporting to the public and the public sees a large number of students possibly open enrolling out when, in fact, they're at a charter school within the district, I don't think that's a fair representation of what has occurred. So we'll be willing to work with you over the interim here, and you certainly have heard from a number of people on some possible solutions, and we would certainly like to be a part of that.
Thank you. Just a question, Mr. Schneider. Mm-hmm. In case you know this, you represent school board members who are elected officials. About how many members do you have? Because these are not professionals. They are elected by people in this state. How many school board members do we have in the state of Minnesota? And I'm not sure you know the answer, so I hate to put you on the spot.
No. Madam Chair, you're right. I don't know the answer exactly, but we're over 2,000, and we have all 340 school districts belong to our association, so all those are publicly elected school board members who join by choice, not by requirement, by choice, to be a part of our association to receive our services.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Ms. Altschlager.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Altschlager, Education Minnesota, and we represent 70,000 members. And I believe, because I'll probably get this question, I don't believe we have any charter school members as a total charter school unit at present. Although we have had some in the past. We may have some individual members. I am not sure about that. I have testified over and over and over again over the years about charter schools, stating that we are supportive of the concept, at least in terms of charter schools going forward and other alternatives. But what we have said over and over again is that we are concerned about the lack of accountability, the lack of examination, the lack of oversight in some of these situations. And we have asked the legislature to please look carefully at charter schools, look at their practices, and so I am very thankful that these things are being discussed today. Since they were, charters have been put in place, you know, in 1991, and it's 2008, we're finally getting to it, so I appreciate that. We have some recommendations, and it's not limited to only these, and I'll go briefly through these. Since sponsorship accountability has been brought up over and over again, we won't get into that, but we do feel that if there is some kind of mismanagement at the charter school level, that the sponsor should hold some kind of fiduciary responsibility for the activities of a charter school. And if a sponsor feels that it is difficult to be have that oversight of a charter school, then laws should be changed so that sponsors may have the proper oversight so that they are responsible for the activities in a charter school. We agree with the MSBA on the leave to teach at a charter school, and I'll just leave it at that. While we are examining charter schools and trying to determine how best to move forward in any possible changes, we would suggest that there be a moratorium or a cap put on charter schools and then get everything fixed and then move forward as appropriate. If the advisory council were to continue, we would suggest that you add another individual on there from the School Board Association and from Education Minnesota. If you look at the statute, it really is a lot of like-minded people, people who are expressed interests in charter school. And I think it would be healthy for an advisory council to go forward if you have many different opinions on that council. We are also concerned about the workers in the charter schools. We do get calls periodically from individuals who teach in the charter schools who are very frustrated with some of the practices, whether it deals with financial issues, instructional issues, curriculum issues, or administrative issues. And we would recommend that you do two things. We would recommend that you protect these employees from negative actions if they report financial irregularities, instructional concerns, conflicts of interest, or other statutory violations. And I think that's a pretty good compromise, really. I mean, to what you know, teachers' union might propose, but we just want these people to be able to speak out about what is happening and not fear for negative employment consequences. Also, we believe that these workers should have a better understanding of the employment situation that they have. And that, so we would suggest that when a person is hired, that the terms and conditions of their employment be put in writing so that they understand what is expected of them, what are their hours, what's their contract, so that they can go to their contract to, and I'm, I shouldn't say use the word contract, just have it in writing so that they understand what their job duties will be and their employment situation. And that is it for my testimony.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We have three parents who are here. Would you tell me, do you want to come together or do you want to come separately? Separately? Okay. Brian Kirby.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your endurance, those that are left.
Thank you for your patience.
You know, frankly, my comments are going to be more like the color commentary in a sports event, because a lot of these issues are very technical, and I'm just coming here as a father of a kid who goes to a charter school for the sake of kind of disclosure. I'm a DFLer, I'm a supporter and an active member of Isaiah, and I'm here in support of our charter school, Nova Classical Academy. Now, my son is now in his sixth year at Nova Classical Academy, and over the past year, a lot of the conversation that's been going on in our society, in state government, is about what can't be done. For example, we need to do less because the needs of people are less important than the needs of revenue reductions, and we're all faced with this problem, like as if revenue reduction were tax relief, which is like what? Alka-Seltzer. It's absurd. I say enough because there is enough. There's enough for public schools, be they charter or be they traditional. I recently read a report on charter schools by the Institute on Race and Poverty, and I've got to say it's strongly worded, pervasive, persuasive, heavily footnoted, and I think when it comes to Nova Classical Academy, which is mentioned, it is wrong. Let me tell you a little bit about Nova Classical Academy. Where is it located? At the old St. Gregory's Parish School in St. Paul. It was put there as the building was available. It was not put there to siphon away white students from where the other schools are, as the authors allege. Is there an informal scoping out, as the report says, of parents and teachers? Well, frankly, no. What a crock. As a charter, it is open to everyone. Entrance is based on a completely transparent lottery system with sibling preference and the fact that our teachers or administrators can't bring their kids in with any kind of a preference. Now, does the school ask for volunteer hours of 20 hours per year per family? Yes. What happens if the parents say no? Let me tell you, and I know from experience, nothing. The kids still get into and thrive at Nova, and take this from a slacker. Now, how and where does Nova market? Along with all the other schools at the Roy Wilkins Auditorium once per year, by word of mouth, and by buying a 2x3-inch ad in the Villager newspaper. And I find the Villager everywhere in St. Paul. Nova is culturally diverse. When you walk the halls of Nova, hear the parents speaking to their children in English, Spanish, French, Russian, Chinese, and Hindi. There are 15% of the kids on subsidized meals, perhaps a smaller percentage compared to other urban schools, but all of those kids in the school are attesting at least satisfactory, and more than half of them at the top levels of academic performance in the state. Nova's test scores are good. In a perfect world, Nova's scores, which are among the highest in the state, would be just average. Nova delivers good, measurable results. In a perfect world, every public and private school would deliver the same high-quality education as Nova. So I ask you, please, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. I respectfully submit that Nova is a model and a curriculum that all public schools and private schools should aspire to emulate. It delivers great education at a cost-value ratio that is unmatched. I'm asking you, as a father, as a citizen, to do what you need to do with legislature in such a way that the most successful educational model in the state, and I submit that's Nova, can continue and advance education for our children. We need to grow at Nova. We need a building. And right now the bond market is a really tough place to get the money to build a building. We would love to take a building from anywhere, but there's a lot of like territorial attitudes that if we're successful and we're growing, we can't have a building from someplace that's closing down. We would love a building. Somebody please help us out here. Well, anyway, I invite you. As a parent, I think I can facilitate your visit. Please, you're all welcome to come visit Nova, see what it's about, see the kids, see the order, see the shining faces, see the happy kids. Thank you.
Questions? Senator Paulson?
Yes, a question is, Kirby, since our topic today, the testimony is focused on legislative changes, and since you've been here now for, you know, a good 2 hours.
And I'm an expert.
And you're an expert now, just like all of us. I hear you defending a charter school, and I don't know why that we've come at, that we as a body have attacked NOVA.
Well,
I'd like to finish my comments, please, Mr. Kirby. Absolutely. I'd like you to respond to some of the proposals you've heard today in terms of sponsorship, because NOVA is not on the list of schools that's on our radar right now. There are schools that we're struggling with who serve children, and they're not serving them very well, and that's why we're here. So I guess I'm going to ask you, you know, as a parent who's, I hope, is here, not just about your child, but of all the kids in the state, because you do represent Isaiah, you've mentioned that, some of our concerns are about people who aren't doing their job. That's why we're here. We're not out to get charter schools. That seems to be the perception of some people, unfortunately. We are trying to deal the fact with very limited resources this year and having to look at a significant budget cut or else a deficit, and we can't spend or cut our way out of this. What is your response to some of the other things you heard today? Was there anything that you felt was worthy of our consideration?
Well, thank you, Senator Saltzman, and let me just say, I'm not operating as a representative of Isaiah. I'm here as just a single man. There have been a lot of ideas here. I don't think anyone who has their kid in a charter school, or any of the teachers that I know, mind good, tight administration. I think that the whole philosophy of NOVA is measurable results, is creating an environment where things work. Those things that are structured to make that happen are a good thing, and I think would be welcomed. There are a lot of issues about capping the number of charter schools, sort of union issues. My mom was a union teacher. She was in the Wisconsin Union. I grew up in an educational family. I've been in unions. I'm very sympathetic to unions. I understand that a union has to protect its members, and I'm all for it. I think that we need to make sure that good things are happening, and I think that the structures have to be in place. But there's also a territorial imperative in a bureaucracy to take care of your own. And if there's an organization out there that feels threatened, they're going to strike back. And I also think that some of the, well, race, this whole issue of race, and I don't hear you guys saying that you're after charter schools. But I read this report, and they are after charter schools, and they essentially are calling us racist. And I don't think race is an easy issue, and I don't think it can necessarily be cured inside public education. I think that that public education provides a piece and can only reflect what's going on in society. Underserved communities need to be lifted up, and I don't know that just education is going to do it. My feeling is if you have a school like NOVA, which takes a kid in and trains them to be a good thinker, teaches them self-reliance, fortitude, temperance, that kid, whatever race they are, whatever socioeconomic class they come from, is going to succeed. So I would just hope that there's a place for our model to be examined and be replicated through society, because I think what we have works.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next we have David Bercy. We are going on 2.5 hours. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chairs and members of the board. My name is David Bercy, and I'm also a parent from Nova Classical Academy. We have the deck stacked a little bit this evening, just maybe a show of hands of how many parents we have here. So, so what I'll try to do is I'll try to be brief and get to some other points that the other parent didn't make. So I'm a father of 6 children. My wife and I live in West St. Paul, and we do this on one income. So we have a history of 5 years at NOVA. We've got We've got, my oldest child is in seventh grade, my youngest is in kindergarten, and we're completely impressed with the work that they're doing. So some of the things I heard this evening is about looking at a model and being able to replicate a model, and this is, whatever they've got going there, it's an excellent model, and in fact, my wife and I talk about this, and we wish that we had had an opportunity to have a kind of, the kind of education that my children are having at Nova. So I hear a lot of talk this evening about results, high test scores. The eighth graders last year had the highest test scores in math and reading and science of the entire state of Minnesota, so all public schools. So that's, it's remarkable. I don't know what they did, but it's fantastic. So the model that they picked at Nova is a classical model, and just some highlights of that: Latin begins in third grade, logic instruction begins in fifth grade, they use primary source texts. There's integrated character education, teachers are masters of their content, writing is integrated across the curriculum, and history is the backbone of the curriculum. Now, our children are well adjusted at Nova, and whatever they do as far as creating an ethical environment, a safe environment, I ask my children about drugs, I ask my children about bullying, and it appears not to be present at Nova. And so that kind of environment, my children feel safe, they feel that they're able to use their talents, that they have a good environment where they can learn, and they're doing quite well there. So that's something, if anything, a classical model or an ethical environment, and where you have integrated character education, I think that really breeds great results. Some other points that I'd like to make is that my children are talking with other children, and they look at scope of assignments, projects, what they're working on, and they can, and my children can now see that they're receiving this high caliber of education at Nova, because the level of work is quite demanding, and they can really see where they're gauged against other students. And I guess the main reason I thought, you know, that I was here this evening is I heard some press and some things that I was reading about our lease aid being cut. So what I'm coming here to plead is that our lease aid would not be cut. I know that, you know, as you know, charter schools cannot issue bonds or levy taxes to maintain our program, so we need that help. But at the same time, we're contributing as much as we can. We talked about the volunteering. Every year I volunteer to help keep the grounds proper for the school as they're opening. I bring my children along to the school. They're actually cleaning the school, helping to paint, helping to get the school ready. That's another thing we can replicate, keeping the operating costs down by having parents volunteer, by having kids come in. My kids come in, they feel like they own the school, and so there's a real sense of accomplishment. So we're keeping costs down, outcomes high, and I think that's an innovative model. Now, as families, we're also donating to the school. We personally donate so that teachers can go for training courses, for curriculum development. So even though it's a tuition-free school, we feel that we're committed to donate to the school. And I think the other point that I want to make is that when Nova started out, we wanted to have a trivium of grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And we realized that with the primary school and the middle school of logic, but we're looking to have a high school which would fulfill the mission and the charter of grammar, the trivium, the K-12 trivium of grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And so we're hoping to open a high school, but we need to secure a campus, and that's our biggest struggle at this time. You know that Nova is open to all applicants. We talked about that. There's no entrance exams or interviews. Anyone can apply. It's just a matter of choice. Do you want to drive across town? Do you want a carpool? So it's this extra effort that parents need to make. The school is very demanding, has high expectations. We're working with our children every evening on their homework, and we think the sacrifice is worth it. We don't complain about it. We don't complain about the commute. We don't complain about the homework. It's excellent for our children. And the last point that I want to make is that my kids are talking about now that my oldest is in seventh grade, and they're already talking about high school, and in St. Paul there is no public school that has a classical model. So my children would like to continue on in this classical model, which has been very successful, and that's something that St. Paul could offer as a public charter school that has the classical curriculum. And so I would just urge you to maintain our current lease aid. And at Nova, we had We added 50 students last year. We now serve 400 students. There are 300 students on the waiting list. People want to get into a school like this. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Sulston.
So I'm not going to ask you what you felt about our legislative proposals because that was the agenda tonight, but you did bring up lease aid, and I believe that the director of your school has been advised that there will be a separate hearing on facilities and lease aid.
Okay.
And that would be a good time for us to have that discussion. So I have communicated with your school director about some of the concerns that you have, and I appreciate that you're here tonight to discuss NOVA, but we have many other schools in our community that have excellent programs too. So I hope that our conversation will continue to focus on tonight's agenda with legislative, because I don't think I heard that you had any specific recommendations of the dilemmas we have before us with some of the oversight issues. So that would be the that would be what we would appreciate hearing about in the future.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Tanya Olson, and I have a letter here from Tanya. I will make sure that our members, all the members here who had to leave, will get this, okay? Thank you very much for your patience. And your baby has been so good. All right. Anyone else care to testify? Say something? All right. Then I'm going to call this meeting.
Just make come out our next meeting, Representative.
Oh, yes.
For those who are here and just for the audience as well, is that our next hearing has been scheduled for Friday, January 9th. We will be back in session. I believe we are looking at a meeting time of 10:30 to 12:30. The Education Committee meets then. I know the House has some other committees. We're trying to accommodate workroom schedules. The topic of that meeting will be facilities. Lease aid will come up with that. But I think that's an issue that we've had some, you know, some questions about. We'd like to brief members on it. So we will have that posted. And I believe we also have dates penciled in for the 16th and also the 23rd. We don't have agendas set for that yet. But just if you want to pencil those dates in at this time. So.
Also, I want to remind people that we handed out some questions last time for people to go visit, members to go visit some charters in their district or ones that topic interest them. And I hope we can do that.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Meeting adjourned.